WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The 47th presidency has begun. President Trump's second inaugural address mentioned unity, but also included many of his partisan plans. We reflected on President Trump's speech with historian Rick Perlstein. He's an expert on the conservative movement, one that Donald Trump has radically reshaped over the last decade. He's the author of several books, including Reaganland, America's Right Turn, 1976 to 1980, and The Invisible Bridge, The Fall of Nixon and the Rise of Reagan. We also checked in with Sun-Times politics and government reporter Mitch Armantrout, Palatine Township Republican Chairman Aaron Del Mar, Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley, and Chair of the Illinois Republican Party, Kathy Salvey. Rick, kick things off.
I think the major theme was announced in the first few sentences. The golden age of America begins today. Our country will flourish today onwards. My recent election is a mandate to completely and totally revise a horrible betrayal, quote, quote, dot, 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 to give the people back their democracy and indeed their freedom. So what we're looking at is basically a division of the world into this, you know, completely impure, corrupt present and this completely pure redemption that, you know, lives in the past and the future. And, you know, there's a big debate going on among historians about, you know, whether it's fair to say that this guy and this movement he leads is fascist. But those are classic fascist themes. The idea that there's one group of people who cannot be redeemed and another group of people who redeem them. And then when he brings in, I've been saved by God to make America great again, and says the journey to reclaim our republic has not been an easy one, that I can tell you, those who wish to stop our cause, right, our cause, have tried to take my freedom and indeed my life. So that means kind of the same institutions that, you know, had gave him a trial and a jury before his peers for which he was indicted and then convicted and then sentenced are functionally equivalent to these crazy people in the woods who are trying to kill them.
How would you say his overall address compares to ones we've heard in the past?
Well, I mean, the only possible comparison could be, you know, something like his in 2016, you know, when he declared American carnage that he was going to redeem. I mean, the whole idea that the totality of American institutions that are supposed to check, you know, the possibility that an executive would want to be a tyrant or a dictator, you know, are optional, right? The fact that, you know, he announced a series of executive orders. He left out the one in which he was going to, you know, unilaterally change the Constitution, the 14th Amendment.
Oh, yes. Right? I had almost forgotten about that one.
He left that out. The idea that, you know, it was just full of made up things, like the idea that crime is skyrocketing when crime is going down. And this whole idea of the golden age doesn't really resemble, you know, the way American politicians are supposed to do things, right?
What stuck out to you from the speech, Mitch, and things that could directly impact us here in Chicago?
Right. Perhaps? I mean, when it comes to his speech itself, like you were saying, I mean, this is sort of Trump's greatest hits, you know, really hitting his red meat sort of issues when it comes to immigration, which I think is the number one thing on the minds of most folks in Chicago who are paying attention. Obviously, a huge migrant population in the city. We're all waiting to see when these immigration customs enforcement raids start happening. And, you know, we obviously didn't get any specifics from the president in his speech, but again, just he really kept on painting this picture of, you know, a wave of migrants crossing the southern border, many of them
invading.
Criminals, you know, which, you know, is not really borne out in reality from what we've seen. Most of those folks who have arrived at the southern border coming from Venezuela, rightfully seeking asylum, which they have a right to do. But, you know, it's exactly what I think we could have expected to hear. And I think we're going to hear a lot more of it in the weeks to come.
The fact that he said that this day will be remembered, January 20th will be remembered as Liberation Day.
Yes.
Was one of the more disgusting things, I think. Because, of course, as he himself acknowledged, it's also Martin Luther King Day.
That was
so
the very
me,
next kind sentence.
That sounded like a dog whistle that, no, we're taking back this day. It's Liberation Day. Liberation Day from whom? Well, from a black vice president, from a support, a president who affected to support people of all sorts of backgrounds. And it's being, you know, delivered to, quote unquote, the people, but a very specific and limited definition of the people for which he offers unity so long as they kind of play along with what he wants.
Hmm. Let's hear some of Trump's words here.
January 20th, 2025 is Liberation Day.
So that's, of course, what you're referring to. I mean, what does that tell you about the direction of this country when you hear him say things like that? Juxtapose it with Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yeah, I think it's about as radically polarizing as we can be. He kept on saying we're experiencing a unity unlike any before, which is kind of one of these big lies that kind of Trump pulls out that you can't even really kind of get your mind around. It's a thought terminating cliche. You know, what does it mean if we're experiencing lots of unity when the country, you know, is divided, you know, just down the middle? You know, you won a pretty slim, you know, 2 million votes, you know, kind of historically speaking. And yet he says, you know, I have this, colossal mandate that can't be questioned if you are, you know, again, mm-hmm. a real American, if you're part of the people.
Right. So he, of course, goes on to talk about the executive orders that he's supposed to be signing today. Let's hear a little bit of his words on energy.
First, I will declare a national emergency at our southern border. All illegal entry will immediately be halted, and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came. We will reinstate my remain in Mexico policy. I will end the practice of catch and release, and I will send troops to the southern border to repel the disastrous invasion of our country.
So my apologies there. He also later talked about declaring a national energy emergency. There was a lot of emergencies, a lot of national emergencies being discussed in his in his speech today. Your thoughts hearing that, Mitch?
You know, it's he really just played into, like you said, I mean, there was talk of unity, of unifying the nation, but also talking about, this major betrayal by the outgoing
betrayal, which is, that's treason. The outgoing administration, betrayed you good people and deserves the fate of a traitor. I did actually catch the drill baby drill, kind of thing. And what he said was the inflation crisis was caused by massive overspending and escalating energy prices. So that's a lie, right? It's just something he just made up, right? All experts say it was, caused by supply shocks and, all these other things contributed. But that was just a way he built a foundation to say something that, also is incredibly misleading. That's why today I will declare a national energy emergency to drill baby drill. Well, we're a net energy exporter,
right?
So he's just kind of like, he when you have license to kind of make up your own facts, it's really easy to kind of build this attractive picture for his supporters.
Well, let's add a conversation to this voice. Joining us now on the line from Washington is Aaron Del Mar, who's a committeeman for the Palatine Republicans in the Northwest suburbs. Welcome back to Reset, Aaron.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So tell us, what's it looking like? What's the vibe right now in D.C.?
Well, the vibe in D.C. is probably a lot different than the vibe there is in Chicago where everybody else is at. The weather is probably very similar to being the same, but the vibe is different. Right out here in Washington, it is very much energetic and enthusiastic about the new president being inaugurated and the change that's going to be taking across our great nation.
So where are you right now exactly?
I'm in Washington, D.C. at the Sheraton outside of the Pentagon. We're just going to be getting ready for a couple more events tonight and then the inaugural balls.
So give us your big takeaways from the inaugural address.
Well, the inaugural address was received very much like some of the rallies were. They filled the Capital One Center here to the brim. There was standing room only. People started coming out at 5 o'clock in the morning. Yesterday's rally had over 30,000 people, with people being turned away. Everyone through the Republican Party from coast to coast, from north to south, has ascended on Washington, D.C. to celebrate this momentum victory. And I know that probably doesn't resonate with a lot of the other people in Chicago or other members of the people on this interview, but 77 million people had their voices heard. He won the Electoral College. He won the popular vote. And the policies that he has instituted, he's been very frank and upfront about. And I think that he, unlike other people, are going to use, this bully pulpit and try to enact these reforms and enact these policies as which he promised.
So to that end, I mean, tell us, why is President Trump your guy? What do you feel that he represents for you?
I don't look at any person as my moral compass, and I don't need to have my president be the historic leader that, everyone else expects. I look for something in different qualities and who can represent my values and represent my vision as close as possible. And in this race, it was President Trump. I think his ideas on the economy, I think on his ideas on securing the southern border, working on inflation and trying to bring back manufacturing jobs and trying to, put the United States in a stronger position, both domestically and foreign. If you look at some of the more creative ideas he mentioned during his speech, he spoke about creating the external revenue service. He talked about those types of things. I think those kind of things, those financial ideas resonate with a lot of Americans. While people were trying to take micro positions on social issues, we were concentrating on the cost of eggs. And those are the issues that made sense at the dinner table, the kitchen table. And that's why he was able to run the table on all seven swing states. That message resonated. And everyone that I've talked to since then, and probably some the other interviews that I've done, people always said it was because the American people are misogynistic or they're racist and they weren't ready for a female president. I don't agree with that. I think that there was bad messaging. I think it was a bad campaign. It was rushed together in 102 days. And I think we were on top of it. And I think the American people heard the messaging and the vision that we have for the next 4 years. And they were unhappy with the last 4 years. And that's resulted in President Trump being inaugurated today.
What does the rest of the day look like for you, Aaron, before I let you go?
Well, it's mostly, regular meetings. I mean, we've been doing a lot of policy meetings right now. He's getting ready to sign some executive orders and then go to his luncheon. And then the rest of us are going to be breaking up. There's about 3 or 4 inaugural balls that we're going to be attending. And then tomorrow we're going to get back to work.
That's Aaron Del Mar. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you for your time.
We've also been speaking with Mitch Armantrout from the Sun-Times. Mitch, thank you so much.
Thank you, as always.
Now we'll turn to Democratic Illinois Congressman Mike Quigley, representing parts of North Chicago and surrounding suburbs. Welcome back to the show, Congressman.
Thanks for having me.
On Friday, you were appointed to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. You previously served on this committee from 2015 to 2022, including when the committee looked into Russian interference back in 2016 during that election period, and the first impeachment of President Trump. So given all of that, I wonder how you're reflecting on this moment of having a twice impeached president return to the White House.
Twice impeached, convicted felon who incited a bloody assault, a coup on our nation's capital almost exactly 4 years ago. Yeah, it's staggering. And I keep hearing how Democrats made mistakes in this election and we should have won. But honestly, all that's true and we have work to do. But I just can't give people a pass voting for a president who has such a record. But it's where we are now and we have to do the best we can.
You are not in D.C. for the inauguration. Why not?
It's our annual MLK holiday service day, and almost every year we work at Nourishing Hope, a facility that not only provides food but addresses the social needs of the community here. Honestly, didn't want to break that tradition. also sends messages. First, many of the plans that the Trump administration have will create greater food insecurity at a time when it's extraordinarily high as it is. We want to draw attention to that. The Chicago Food Depository and all the other pantries just can't possibly meet the need that's out there, and it's only going to get worse. Second, as I came in the door, there was a sign notifying ICE that they're not permitted in. Here we are attempting to work and help a community that's undergone a great deal of strife, and they're about to be a target of raids in who knows where, because it's so scattered, right? Churches, schools, businesses, shelters, and facilities like we worked in today. So we're trying to let people know what their rights are. We're trying to address it, working with the state and local government, right, and all the agencies and organizations that serve the community.
Confirmation hearings are happening now for Pete Hegseth, who to become the defense secretary. As a member of the Intelligence Committee, if Hegseth were to be confirmed, how would you work with him?
Look, unfortunately, the same way I'd have to work with Tulsi Gabbard, Kash Patel. It's such a rogues gallery, to be honest. You simply have to function as a government, given the circumstances. None of this makes sense. And what it tells me is the fact that the president felt the need to pardon the people in the last administration, part of the commission, tells me he's learned his lesson. He's not going to bring on anybody who isn't going to be a sycophant, who won't do exactly what he says. And as we know, in the last days of his first term, you know, if it wasn't for those people who turned out to be patriots in the Justice Department and Defense Department standing up to him, his attempts to overturn the election might have succeeded. Our foreign policy disasters were averted. So, you know, how do you work with somebody in these veins? There's some things that just have to function. But let me focus on just one of those. Tulsi Gabbard is going to be the director of national intelligence if approved. This is the directorship we created after 9/11 so that our intel community would share information more freely and, you know, an attempt to prevent another 9/11 and share that information with our allies. How many of our allies are going to want to share information knowing that she had secret meetings with Syrian president and close ally of Putin, Bashar Assad? And when she came back, she said he wasn't an enemy of the U.S. and that she uses Putin talking points. Are they really going to trust us? And does she really understand, with no experience, how that relationship building has to take place between the 18 entities of our intelligence community? So, and now you're going to have someone in charge of the Department of Defense with absolutely no experience, who fails to understand the critical role that women play in the military. Just the beginning of concerns about him.
Lots to keep in mind there. We'll let you go. Democratic Illinois Congressman Mike Quigley joining us. Thank you so much for checking in.
Thank you. Take care.
Presidential historian Rick Perlstein still here in studio with me. What did that conversation bring to mind for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think about the personnel he's choosing, too. And not only the personnel he's choosing, but the way they're being, you know, waved through by Republicans in the face of very blunt evidence. Like, the Democrats will say, here is what happened to this, you know, $5 million budgeted organization that you ran that, you know, ran out of money and its finances were so copped up that they needed a forensic accountant. And then they hired him to another organization similar. Now you're running a $1 trillion organization. The guy he appointed to be the Federal Communications Commission chair has literally said to CBS, I'm not going to consider your merger with a very lucrative merger with a film company because, quote unquote, there's a news distortion complaint at the FCC still having to do with CBS. Now, CBS what they did was they did the same thing every interview on 60 Minutes has ever done since the show started in 1960. It's the 1960s. They edited in a completely normal way, and the Trump is suing, right?
Right.
And now CBS is talking about settling for several millions of dollars in the face of this threat. The guy, this FCC guy, he is behaving like a bag man. He's like soliciting money from a news organization, and you know the valor of news organizations mm-hmm. and their willingness to basically place themselves at existential risk to do their job may be the most terrifying thing of all.
Let's hear from the chair of the Illinois Republican Party, who is joining us now from Washington, D.C., Kathy Salvey. Welcome to Reset.
Sasha, great to be with you on Reset. And the mood here in Washington is festive and very hopeful.
Well, that's good to hear. As you know, Kathy, the state of the economy, it was a big factor for voters across the country. And so today is day one. I want to know what you want President Trump to do to lower the cost of living for families.
Well, that's why he was elected. You see, this is a historic election where working class men and women, young people, people of all races and creeds came together to elect him because they, I believe, have seen in his desire to put America first and to secure our borders, to bring back more money in the paycheck for the regular working mom and dad and, you know, worker, that he's going to deliver on that. And
tell me what that means to you. America first. What does that mean?
Well, first of all, you ask anybody, people are getting two and perhaps three extra jobs. College graduates can't find meaningful work after they graduate. Young married couples can't afford homes. And this is brought about all because of failed Democrat policies of these last 4 years.
So
when I'm talking about this optimism that President Trump and this administration will bring, we're already seeing it take its course. Sealing up the border, calling the southern border a national emergency, and making sure that the people who've committed violent crimes are deported stat immediately. This is a very good thing. You've got young people, workers in Chicago who go to and from work, and they're accosted at a bus station or at a L platform. And so whether it's a parent who can't feel comfortable with their kids riding a bike in the street for fear of violence, or people who are just trying to do business and go about their day working in the city of Chicago and throughout all other urban areas, there's just a sense of hope that this president will bring security to our neighborhoods through the policies.
Yeah,
and I believe that to be true.
So let's stick with that for a moment. You've written that Governor Pritzker is prioritizing, quote, illegal border crossers over Illinois families. So it sounds like you support the president's mass deportation plan. What do you say, though, to the concern that ICE agents, they're not going to be able to make distinctions between those who are undocumented, immigrants who are documented, and citizens, and that everyone just gets rounded up altogether?
I think that that's fear-mongering, and I think that we have to give those who are going to work on the deportation the benefit of removing violent criminals who crossed the border in the last 4 years. Remember, we've had an unchecked border, fentanyl that has come across to untold and killed untold numbers of people. I think it's one of the largest causes of death for those between 18 and 35. And this is imported from other countries. There has been no check on the border up until this day, and I believe that we've seen pictures. Trust your eyes to see the gangs that are operating throughout our country and the deaths that have increased because of an unchecked border. So I believe that this administration is committed to taking the criminals who've committed these violent crimes out. They're here illegally and they will be deported. And I believe that we have to give them the benefit of that.
What were your overall thoughts of Trump's inaugural address?
I felt it was a very hopeful, optimistic vision. And I think that the optimism optimism that I heard here nationally. We in the Illinois Republican Party will build upon this optimism, and I think unity in our Illinois Republican Party is what will rule the day and help build a stronger Republican Party in our state and win elections in the future.
In the 2024 presidential election, President Trump got 43.5% of the votes in Illinois. This is not a higher number of votes than in 2020, but it's a higher percentage. So in your view, Kathy, what's behind this? And is there room to continue growing support?
Absolutely. Well, you see, it's a 7% point shift to President Trump in a year in which not a dime of national money was spent in Illinois. Of course, we weren't one of the swing states. So we basically in the Illinois Republican Party cut these numbers out of whole cloth. I know that we brought on board 77,000 low propensity Republican voters to take early ballots. And then we had 202,000 low propensity Republican voters vote early. And we in the Illinois Republican Party touched 6.9 million low propensity Republican voters, either through digital or text or mail, to invite them to come on board and vote for our Republican candidates. And I think that the results are in that 7% shift. And I think we're moving in Illinois. I'm really optimistic and so proud to be the chair of the Illinois Republican Party.
We'll leave it there. We've been speaking with Kathy Salvey, who's chair of the Illinois Republican Party. Thank you for talking with us.
Great. Thanks, Sasha.
And presidential historian Rick Perlstein, we appreciate you sticking around. Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by the Reset team and mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset brings you conversations to reflect and interrogate the breaking news of our time. To stay up to date, you can subscribe wherever you listen or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.